We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday. It's the 7th of December 2018. I'm Jamie Veitch, and I'm your host for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. We are broadcasting live in our Christmas jumpers from the Sheffield Live radio studio here in the centre of Sheffield. We're going out on FM radio and through our internet live stream. And however you're listening, the show is also available as a podcast later on from the Sheffield Live website. So who's on today? Well, Chloe Watmore is in the studio with us. She's the Managing Director of Thermotex Engineering Limited, and I'm really looking forward to hearing from Chloe. But before we turn to Chloe, who was on last week, we mentioned podcasts are available, and yes, you can catch the podcast of last week's show if you missed it, because it was a corker as ever. Nicola Middleton-Groom was on the programme. She's the Managing Director of Wax. They sell underwear, and they sell men's, women's and children's underwear. They also sell swimwear, and they sell hoodies and other things too, but their main business is underwear. And Nicola came into the studio and she talked about how she has built the business and built up their online presence as well. So that going from really zero through to a huge amount of online sales direct to members of the public. What she learnt about e-commerce, how did she specify and build the website, and what tips does she have for you if you are selling through a website? How can you learn from Nicola's journey and avoid anything that she found challenging? So she's got plenty of tips there. It was a really interesting interview with Nicola. I really enjoyed talking with her. If you missed the programme, then you can catch the podcast. Also on last week's show, Steve Knowles came back to the studio. We describe him as an accountant with a heart and a soul, which is such a rare thing in an accountant, believe me. But he brought both his soul and his heart to the studio for us and talked about protecting your business or your social enterprise from the impact of events that are outside of your control. He talked about planning and resilience. And I know so many of us are perhaps worried about what may happen due to Brexit, due to other things. Steve has some ideas, some tips that you should implement now to protect yourself and to make sure you are resilient, whatever comes, whatever happens next year. So it was a great show. Really enjoyed talking with both last week's guests. If you missed it, go on to sheffieldlive.org, find radio shows, look up Business Live, and you'll be able to catch the podcast of last week's programme. You could also browse Sheffield Live's website and find a whole host of exciting podcasts, from Northern Soul and Motown to a Thursday evening programme about the unexplained, presented by Jade Knox. There's so much there on Sheffield Live to enjoy, so have a look. Have a listen. Anyway, that was then. This is now. Who is on today? Chloe Watmore is here with us in the studio. Really pleased to welcome Chloe to Sheffield Live. Chloe, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me, Jamie. Really excited to be here.
Thank you for coming in. I'm super excited too, and I'm very pleased that you've come dressed in Christmas jumper and Christmas hat. This is splendid.
Obviously.
It's a good look for radio.
Thank you. Yes, I have a nice fluffy penguin hat with a bobble on the top. I thought that was absolutely perfect for today.
Good, marvellous. And have you been opening your advent calendar?
Absolutely. Good. Working my way through those. It's still chocolate. I'm not too big for a chocolate advent calendar at all.
No, I don't think we ever are. So can you introduce yourself? Do this sort of 60-second introduction, Chloe, if I can ask you for that. Who are you and what does Thermotex do?
Absolutely. So I'm Chloe Watmore. I'm 25 and I am the MD of Thermotex Engineering in Chesterfield. And Thermotex is an engineering company and we specialise in thermal challenges. We're a small team. We've grown hugely over the last few years. We started off as a team of five. My parents founded the business back in 1995. So they've built this core, this hub of the business, and they are handing over the reins to me. So yes. uh, d- dad has now kind of passed on the hot potato, if you like. Mm. and I have some big boots to fill. But it's a really exciting time. So we are trying to grow and expand and cover new markets. But when I say we solve thermal challenges, we are dealing with things that might be getting too hot or too cold in an industrial setting. So right. That might be that things, industrial valves or something like that, doesn't work in Arctic conditions of minus 60 degrees C in Russia, and you've got polar bears on site and all kinds of other things. Or you might be dealing with a nuclear fusion reactor that's getting very hot, so the reaction inside is hotter than the sun. Mm. And you've got people working in the vicinity. You obviously don't want anyone to get burnt or touch something, so the challenges can be really vast. But we're looking where there's some kind of disparity in heat, and then we're advising our clients how they might be able to solve those. And then we also work on kind of manufacturing products, so it's really nice to be a manufacturer based in the Sheffield region as well.
Wow. Now, that is absolutely fascinating. What an incredible business. Thermal challenges. You've answered the question I was going to ask. What is a thermal challenge? So this is somewhat more sophisticated than lagging my pipes and so on. These are more bigger challenges.
Yeah, I think the temperature tends to be a real kind of defining factor. But we do also deal with kind of things freezing, you know, at a simple level, whether you've got water in a process line that could be freezing.
Yes.
But we do deal with temperatures, like I say, kind of cryogenic temperatures in minus 60 and below, and then all the way up to 1200 degrees C in fire we might be dealing with too. So it's quite a range to cover and look after.
Great. Okay. Fascinating. So I've got so many questions to ask you and so much to sort of unpack from that description, which was a brilliant, succinct introduction, and thank you for that. You talked about your parents founding the company in 1995 and the business taking on the hot potato, if you like, as you described it. And I want to ask you about that in a moment or two.
For sure.
But just tell me a little bit more, though, about where you're working. You've sort of hinted at different places worldwide. So your clients, your customers, where are they? They're all over the UK and all over Europe, all over the world. How does that work?
So our major market is actually Russia. Mm. So very cold climate, and we work extensively with some big clients over there. But we also work in the Nordic regions. We work in the North Sea offshore, UK onshore. So all across the UK, from Scotland down to Devonshire and across to Wales. We're covering a lot of area there. Also European countries from France to Spain to Hungary and Poland and Germany, to name a few. And then we're moving further afield, as we say. So we've worked with our first client in Australia. We're at the moment looking to work with more clients in Canada. And we're also looking tentatively to move into Asian markets in the next year or two.
Okay, grand. That's absolutely fascinating. Good stuff. And the size of the company in terms of employee numbers, how big are you?
Yeah, so we're a team of 25 at the moment. So if I look back to January 2016, we were only a team of 6 at that time.
Yeah.
So it's been a really exciting journey growing the team and kind of going and looking for talent and bringing people on board and getting that momentum behind us. But we're not stopping here, let's say that. So we're planning to keep pushing on the growth over the next year and beyond, really. Yes.
That's absolutely remarkable, that growth in that time and that continued growth trajectory as well. So what's happened then since January 2016? What happened just before January 16 and what's happened since then? How's that growth been achieved?
For sure. So if I kind of rewind a little bit, I joined the company straight after my degree.
Yes.
And I was kind of working on business development and things like that, and really just understanding the corners of what does a small business look like, what does a business do really, and the little kind of things that go on in between. And I started working on a big project with my dad, and we won our biggest project to date, which was a big project in Russia. And that's been a kind of real defining moment for the company, to be honest. It was a real proud moment, and it was really lovely to work with Dad alongside him. We both went to Paris for the kickoff meeting.
And, yes.
Yeah, it's super exciting. But from there, it kind of opened a door. We knew that as a business, we fundamentally had to change. We had to adapt. We had to really push forwards. And it was going to spark a kind of tough, stretching, but super exciting at the same time, growth period. Mm. So we started investing in tech. At first, this was a little bit before January 2016. We actually bought a big CNC machine, but at first we couldn't get it working, and it actually sat as a glorified coffee table. We actually put coffee cups on our CNC machine.
Really?
It's really frightening to look back now. We had this like Ferrari parked in the garage, and it was just covered in dust. Really sad. So January 2016 was the moment that we decided to turn the machine on, and that kind of was a symbolic but really pivotal moment.
Right.
And I stood on the shop floor, me personally, with a colleague, and we said, we're going to stay here until we've got it working. So we learned the whole thing. We took the manuals apart. We kind of bested it. And from there, it just tumbled onwards. So we painted the factory white. We started to clean everything up. You know, it was a bit like spring cleaning, but for the entire business. Mm. And then we started hiring new talent and growing the team. We started changing all our procedures from manual, you know, all the old filing cabinets, or digitizing everything there, moving over to cloud, moving to systems. We started product tracking through QR coding as well. It was like a real upheaval of everything that we knew that had worked well to date. It got us here, but it wouldn't get us there.
Right.
So we needed to change something fundamental to get us to the next step.
Now, that's absolutely interesting as well. So you're talking about updating processes, modernizing processes, and bringing in new technology, new ways of working.
Yes.
You're talking about you joining the business post-university as well. Mm. And the business that you've talked about having done very well to get to where it was, but then winning major new contracts.
Yes.
And, you know, firing up the Ferrari, as it were, or buying an expensive, you know, investing in an expensive CNC machine and getting it actually working.
Yes.
So you joined, as you said, after university. So where did you go to university? What had you studied?
Yes. So I went to Birmingham University. So I was based down in Edgbaston. And I studied economics.
Yeah.
So I was always quite mathematical and logical all the way through my education, and needed something that reflected that. But it wasn't really where I thought I would be. As a child, I always wanted to study medicine, and I fancied myself as a surgeon. But for those who know me well, it was rather a contradiction, because I had a real problem with blood, guts and gore if it was my own. So I didn't think a surgeon would ever really suit me as a job. So people did steer me away from that. And I'm grateful in hindsight.
I bet you are, yeah. So you go to Birmingham, you study economics, and did you have a career in mind? You know, did you imagine that when you left university, you would go on to a bank or to a consultancy? Or, you know, did you have a particular dream in mind? And what made you then decide to work with your parents, with the business that they'd founded and grown?
Yes. So I didn't really know where I was going, in total truth. I knew what I kind of liked in a broad sense, you know, maths and science and tech more broadly. I'm very much a techie person, very much an Apple person. I'm one of those embarrassing people who has all the gadgets and everything rings at the same time, and it's really annoying for everyone else. And I've always been kind of that way inclined. But when I studied economics, it was supposed to really open doors for me and help me guide me towards a career. And I think when I was at uni, I felt that everyone else had a good idea of what career I should go into, but none of it sounded very interesting to me. So when somebody said, oh, you should be an accountant or go into private equity or banking or whatever, I thought, that sounds really, really boring. Apologies to anyone who's doing that. But for me, it didn't feel like a good fit. I was really interested in my languages. You know, I studied French heavily at school, and then I picked up Spanish at university. I was learning Portuguese on the side. And it was kind of one of those things where I was like, I don't know where I'm going to go next. And I thought about working for a big tech company like an Apple or a Google or one of the big shiny companies that I had admired so much. But the reality was I came out of university and I didn't have a plan. I didn't have that next stepping stone in mind. And a kind of fear of getting lost at that point. Dad said to me, Chloe, while you work it out, why don't you come and work in the business and just find your feet and you know, learn about the different things and the corners of the business and find what you like and what you don't like and just understand that a business is a structure and that when it, you know, big or small, they fundamentally do the same things. And if you understand that, you'll have a kind of a good founding for going forward from there.
Yes, indeed. So this wasn't a sort of come into the business and please hold the potato. This was come into the business. You figured out a few things you don't want to do.
Yes.
And whilst you think about what you do want to do, take on some work here.
Mm.
And so when you came in, the business was small, 6 employees. It must have been a business that you knew very well, as it was your parents' business, and you must have known the people within it. But
yes,
was it challenging coming in as in that role? Did people have perceptions of you?
Oh, definitely. You know, I was always a boss's daughter, and I would come into the factory even as a little girl. You know, I remember going in age 5 or 6, and I mean, some people joke and ask me, you know, how long have you been with the company? And even now I say, well, as long as I could talk and sit around the dinner table at the evenings, because it was just mum and dad were really open about the business with me. Mm. And so they involved me in the chat and they didn't kind of, they've exposed me to it. And so I kind of always knew what was going on from a really early age.
Mm.
So it didn't feel like a big transition to kind of move into the business in one way, and it did majorly in another way, because I started like doing business development type stuff, so looking
yes.
at the terms and conditions and all the kind of stuff that nobody had looked at for a very long time.
Mm.
To the point where I'd kind of turn around and what's a telex, mum? And she, oh gosh, where have you picked that up? And I was like, that's
wow.
in our terms and conditions, so we had to pull that one out.
Yes.
But as time went on, and particularly when we won the contract that I'd been working on the bid with Dad for, Dad asked me at that point, you know, Chloe, are you going to stay? And because if you are, then you should run with the project. And, you know, we talked about me project managing the project. But if not, then he needed somebody else to help, because we'd signed up for this big project and
yes.
it needed someone at the helm of it. And he couldn't do it alone. So I said I would stay and project manage. And at that point, I kind of started to, if you like, metaphorically pick up rocks and look underneath them and, you know, find all the bits that were wrong and look in places where maybe people didn't want me to be looking. And I started to cause problems. I really did.
Right.
And I started to upset people in my quest, my little quest to try and fix things.
Yes.
I was actually pushing people's noses out,
yes.
very much so.
We've always done it this way.
Yes.
Why are you asking us to change it? This
yes.
way works.
Yes, especially kind of moving from paper to digital.
Yeah.
I moved the factory around. I moved kind of physically people's workspaces around to try and make it leaner.
Mm.
You know, clearing everything out, even to paint it and decorate it. It was kind of, you know, why are we doing this?
Yes.
But I believed that actually that light, bright, clean environment would be really great for people's morale. You know, there's lots of industrial settings which are, you know, no offence, but a sardine tin. You know, it's a tin can for a lot of manufacturing companies. And when people are working in those places day in, day out, they need light and kind of that fresh feeling. You don't want to feel like you're working in a dirty environment for a long time. So I had their best interests at heart, but maybe it wasn't always best communicated. And I was young and I was raw. I coined the phrase from someone, a YABI, you know, a yet another bright idea.
Yeah.
And for people who are kind of trying to get on with their jobs, that can be really annoying.
Yes. Yes, indeed. So how did you evolve your communication practices and how did you win people over then to accept or test your ideas?
Yeah, I had to really work on that, you know, when I'm working with different people who I didn't understand how to communicate with and to communicate my ideas. It was going on in my head and how did I actually let people know what I had in mind and what was my ideal outcome of this, and it was meant to help them. So not everyone stayed because it was such a major upheaval, and I think that was reasonable that I changed people's work environments to such an extent that maybe they didn't like it anymore. And we did have some, and then we kind of got a lot of new people in who were kind of walking into that new environment. It was a lot easier for new people to kind of adapt to it.
Yes.
But we have had people stay all the way through the transition. And kind of one of the amazing people works in our warehouse. He's been with the company from pretty much day dot. Me and him struggled at first to communicate with each other, but we really developed quite a flourished relationship. I mean, it was a tough time for him in particular because he was pattern cutting for us. You know, yes. He was actually cutting things out by hand. And when we replaced that with a machine, you know, that's a real major upheaval on people's jobs. And I think this is what people worry about with investing in tech and people displacement. But he stayed and we retrained him in a different area, you know, and to think that he's now, you know, using an iPad as part of his daily production routines. And he's one of the go-to people on the shop floor with an iPad, and you know, he's learned that new tech and he's really embraced it and encompassed it, and like, he's someone I'm really proud of.
Yes. Yeah. So it's been a journey for you and for colleagues.
Yes,
yeah.
Of course,
absolutely. And so when then, so your father said, right, we've got this contract, are you going to stay or are you going to go? We need someone to project manage it. Could be you or I could hire someone. Was it an easy decision or was it a tough decision?
It was a really tough decision at the time. I could see all the potential. I could see a huge opportunity in front of me. And, you know, at the kind of tender age of 22, you don't get those opportunities. And that someone trusted me and believed in me enough to kind of run with something so prestigious and important. Fundamentally, it was too good an opportunity to miss. But there was kind of tough conversations to be had at the same time. I was dating a boy from Kent, you know, the other end of the country.
Yep.
We talked about living in London together,
yes.
You know, kind of personal relationships and everything. But I had the kind of conversation with him and he recognized it as well. And I'm very lucky that he moved up and we're now married.
Yes.
So, you know, a success story there as well. And he's been my rock because I think he's seen all the way through the kind of evolution and the challenges and, you know, all the heartache and headache that goes with the highs and the lows of business.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot there, but he's been my rock. He's kept me steady all the way through it.
Right. Great. Wonderful. And you were married.
Yeah, we got married in May this year.
So congratulations.
Thank you.
So it's been an amazing year for you and it's been a really interesting journey. So you talked then about making that decision because I asked the question whether it was a difficult decision or an easy decision. Because at that point you are moving in mindset from I've doing this for a while to find what I want to do to I'm choosing to do this to commit to this for however long, but to commit to this and to grow this and to fully engage with this business. And obviously you talked about this growth from 6 to 25 in terms of your team and winning lots and lots of further work. So, and implementing new systems and so on. So the potatoes started being passed there, if you like. How then has this been formalized? We've introduced you as managing director of the business.
Yes.
So taking on the reins, is that difficult? You know, I've spoken with some folk in businesses, family businesses, where they have taken on a role and yet the parent or the parents are still in control and they're feeling that I can't actually get anything done without okaying it with my parents. Now, how about you? How's it going in terms of taking on the role, running the business?
Yeah, I think it's a huge transition. And kind of at that moment when I was, you know, you were saying about, was that an easy decision? And I don't think I appreciated the gravity of that decision that I was making at the time because I was making a commitment to stay, but ultimately, the kind of this cascading decisions that came off the back of it was not only staying to project manage, it was staying to take on the reins. It was staying to take on the kind of pass the baton over. It was staying to succeed in the business and actually, you know, formally as a kind of succession plan and think about the long-term strategy of a business into generation two.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of, there would take 2.0, if you like, and that's what you're talking about. So there kind of came some even more serious conversations afterwards about that. And like you say, there's definitely a handover period where you need a lot of support. You haven't done this before, especially for, you know, myself becoming managing director last Christmas. I was 24 at the time.
Yes.
So, you know, you're 24 running a business and you haven't been there before. And it's an amazing thing for me to have my parents there right behind me. They've always said to me, you know, I'm on your shoulder, I'm right behind you, you've got this. And it's definitely a transition period. We definitely kind of had the tug of war, the little kind of rough and tumble, the tussles, because we're all very strong people and we're all so similar in that respect. And we're all, the great thing about family business is you're all fighting for the same thing. So even when you have the kind of the butting heads or whatever it is, you know that you're all driving in the same direction. So it's kind of, I feel like sometimes we agree violently. And that's our way of kind of pushing things forwards.
Right.
That we're all pushing together. So yes, it's been a journey of handover.
Yes.
Dad took a huge step out of the business last Christmas. It's been a huge journey for him as well because the business has been him and he's been the business.
Yeah.
And for us internally in the business as well, kind of downloading all that knowledge and a huge philosophy of mine is that when you digitize a business, you're looking at that kind of central brain of the business and the data bank and making it shareable within your team, because when you have one piece of knowledge that you can share with 25 people, that's much more powerful than one piece of knowledge with one person. So about leveraging knowledge, we had to build that into our systems. But in the first place, we had to download my dad.
Yes.
You know, everything that he knew, we needed to kind of extract it. And that's not a 5-minute job. That's a huge job.
That's an enormous job. Yes. Yeah. An enormous job over, you know, everything that had built up over the business as well.
But, you know, I still use him as my technical consultant. I'll give him a ring and say, hey, Dad, can I pick your brain?
Yes.
And he loves it. We have a coffee and, you know, kind of chat over and kind of chew the fat, if you like. So
brilliant.
Yeah.
So I love this idea of sort of downloading your dad. And then I love the quote that you just mentioned in terms of one piece of knowledge. It is much more powerful if 25 people have access to it than if only one person has access to it.
Yes.
So in terms of knowledge sharing within the business, you've talked about digitizing information. You've talked about knowledge sharing. So specifically, what sort of tools or technologies have you used to share knowledge across your team?
Yes. So we're using a product lifecycle management system, a software system that sits at the heart of our business. It's really been kind of pivotal in the middle. And it kind of even got rid of misinformation and it kind of sorted out, you know, that handover of manual information.
Yes.
That it was, how do we make sure we know where everything is at the right time and we've got accurate information as well. So it wasn't necessarily just knowing what something was or, you know, simple information about data sheets or whatever else it might be. But the reality is getting that slick handover process. So as a team, we're all like, when you pass that baton between different teams in the business, you don't want anyone to drop it.
No.
And or kind of lose it or pick up the wrong baton in between. And that's kind of the analogy is make sure that we've got really tight information transfer. So that's the way that we've done it so far. But I mean, I went over to talk about our software journey in Toronto, actually, with, yes, with Autodesk in September. But we're still on this journey. I don't feel like it finishes, because you start building something and it gets stronger and stronger. The more information that we add to it, it kind of breeds.
Yes.
So even yesterday I was talking to one of my new colleagues who's joined the business, and we were talking about whether we build more of an encyclopedic hub, like Thermotech Wikipedia, if you like, of all the kind of critical questions and where to find them, because people do forget and they want that knowledge base. And, you know, even some of the simple things that we want, that like quick FAQ resource center. Yes. And that's something that we're going to work on next as well.
Right. Great. How exciting.
Yes.
Yeah, indeed. So it's a constantly evolving process.
Yeah.
Good stuff. There's so much more I would like to ask you, and I hope we can. I'm going to take a break for a track of music, and we'll take a break for a track of music, which you've chosen, Chloe,
yes,
if that's okay. something super exciting, super topical as well, because we are all, some of us anyway, we're getting very excited about the time of year. So let's play Kelly Clarkson's Underneath the Tree, we'll play that now.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. Now, are you running a business or a social enterprise? Do you have something to say about business and social enterprise? Whether that you want to comment on government policy, on devolution here in South Yorkshire, on anything that impacts on you, whether you want to put yourself forward to be on the programme or comment or suggest a topic that we should cover, if you want us to get another accountant on the show to talk about how to manage your business cash flow, if you want us to get a marketing expert on the show, if you want us to get or cover any sort of topic, then get in touch, because we'd love to reflect what challenges you, what you're most interested in, and we'd love to give you an opportunity to have your say. Plenty of folk end up on the program because they email me, and two or three have this week, just in the last few weeks, sorry, just in the last few days, saying, can I be on the show? And they've been invited on the show and will be joining me on the program next week. So if next year, sorry, gosh, I can't get the words out today. What's wrong? I haven't had enough coffee. So if you want to put yourself forward to be on the program, all you need to do is email jamie@sheffieldlive.org, send a text to 07904 272 200. Find me on Twitter, Jamie Veitch. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. And that can be to put yourself forward or to make a comment, whatever you like. Do get in touch. If you're running a business, if you're running a social enterprise, if you're an employer, if you're self-employed or freelance, we'd love to hear from you. So please contact us. So today we're talking with Chloe Watmore. Chloe is a Managing Director of Thermotex Engineering Limited, and we've heard about thermal challenges. We've heard about implementing processes and systems. We've heard about the benefits of a family business. We've heard about violently agreeing. It's been really fascinating to talk with Chloe, and we have more questions. I have more questions for Chloe. But if you've only just tuned in and you've missed that first 30 minutes, which I think has been really interesting, then don't panic, because the podcast of today's radio show will, of course, be up on the Sheffield Live website, sheffieldlive.org, from about 11 a.m. So you'll be able to catch it there. Anyway, let's turn back to Chloe. Chloe, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
So, exporting, you talked earlier on about having business in multiple territories worldwide, Russia being a major market. You've talked about potential in Canada, for example. You've talked about potential in Asia as well.
Yes.
And just before the track of music that we played, you talked about going to Toronto to talk at an Autodesk conference.
Yes.
So that's brought with it a lot of travel for you and colleagues. a lot of folk are sort of wondering about exporting in a post-Brexit world, and we don't know the trade deals that we will end up with in any case.
Yes.
So I wanted to ask you if you have any sort of specific tips or advice about exporting. We've had some export experts from time to time on the show, and South Yorkshire International Trade Centre have been on the show in the past and given their views and suggested people ask them for advice. But what have you learned about exporting as you've grown the business?
Mm-hmm. I think culture is key, I think, is a kind of really critical thing that as a Brit, we have a really bad reputation for being culturally aware. And so when you go overseas, I think the thing is to just keep a really open mind. So for me, I try and act like a bit like a magpie. So I'm collecting little bits of different languages when I go, or trying to understand, you know, culture, customs, food, how to shake hands, things like that. A big thing for me was when I went over to Shanghai for the first time, was learning to pass things with two hands and look at people, you know, take things with two hands. Also in Korea, you know, the handshake is slightly different. You support your arm, you know, it's like holding away the sleeve to show that you had no weapons, you know, tucked up your sleeve. And there's some really polite little things that you can do which can go a hugely long way. You know, learned to say nice to meet you in Korean when I went over to Seoul, and I don't profess to be an omniglot for any by any senses, but those little gestures can go a long, long way you know, when you break bread with people. Lots of different cultures are looking to, you know, go on a meal with you and talk about family, and, you know, break down those barriers and just be prepared to invest some time like that. If you want to build relationships with people overseas, there's a lot of cultures where you'll need to do a lot of talking and a lot of kind of just knitting the relationship, I think, so that you can go on and talk about a business relationship afterwards, because it's fundamentally based on trust. So that's one thing. Top tip for me is, you know, do your homework on the culture and do what you can. Don't be afraid to make mistakes, but trying to keep an open mind and pick up when people say, oh, don't do that or whatever.
Yes.
Which I've certainly done. You know, went to Korean barbecue and they brought out fantastic beef, and, you know, we're putting it on the barbecue, they're teaching us how to cook it and the table and everything, and then they brought out one bowl of beef, raw beef, which looked absolutely fantastic. We went to put it on the barbecue, but no, don't do that, this one is for eating raw.
Right,
we couldn't really tell the difference, but, you know, straight away, you have to adapt to that. But that's all fun, and for me that's a huge part of learning and travel. That's the real enjoyment that comes with it as well. I was at an expert panel for Sheffield Chamber a while ago, and one of the things I said is that you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So, you know, if you don't go after export and chase it down, it's not necessarily going to come to you. You've got to put in the legwork. But also look at your markets and look at where you could penetrate easily, you know, where the demand's good. For us, Russia's always been a great market because it's super cold. So, you know, straight away there's a climate challenge there for us. And the same applies with Canada and kind of the top part of the Northern Hemisphere. But even looking to break into the Middle Eastern market, again, there's a thermal challenge, there's a heating disparity, kind of things. So, they say when you're going to climb the ladder of success, make sure it's on the right wall. It's one of those, I think. It's do homework first.
Okay, that's very good advice. It's advice that people often talk about and might consider to be quite simple in terms of the instruction, but actually doing the homework takes a lot of time.
Yes.
And being aware of cultural sensitivities, or when it comes to, say, business customs, for example, as you say, and things like passing a business card with two hands rather than one, and how you shake hands and so on. And that goes an enormously long way to demonstrate that you have done your research and you are aware of different practices. And you talked earlier on about your interest in languages.
Yes.
Has that helped you? You know, it doesn't mean that you can instantly learn to speak a Korean, for example, or Mandarin, but when you went to Shanghai.
Yes.
But having an interest in languages does sometimes mean that you have an aptitude to learn two or three phrases at least, so that you can demonstrate that you're trying.
Definitely. I totally agree. I think having a natural interest for a very long time in languages means that I want to always learn a couple of words, even if you can't, you know, when the characters are different. When you go to Russia, for example, or over to Asia, you're looking at a totally different character base. And so signs are really hard, but even if you can say hello, the kind of simple phrases, they're the ones that I tend to go after, even if you can understand them phonetically. So
yes, right. And that's a really good point. That's a very, very good point indeed, because that can help you to remember them.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I had little kind of hand gestures when I was learning my nice to meet you in Korean. You know, there's different English words that I could almost pair all together in a little sentence with little actions, and that would help me learn a phrase. So yeah. You find your way of doing these silly things, these remembering tips, don't you?
Yes, you do indeed. You do. Super. Okay. So we've talked about a really transformational journey, and I don't use the word transformational lightly, but in terms of the story of Thermatex and where you've got to and where you plan to get to as well, because you said it doesn't stop now.
Yes.
Has it come with challenges? And if so, what have been the challenges and how have you addressed them? What have you found difficult and where have you turned to for advice or for support or for inspiration? And I expect you might well say your parents and so on, and being able to talk with them, but where else?
Yes, there's certainly been huge challenges along the way, and I think some of them come from yourself. You know, I've always been my own biggest critic, if you like, and you do put a lot of pressure on yourself. So I have done some coaching, you know, I've gone to external kind of mentors, if you like, my peer network. I've tried to build particularly my peer network.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of people, there's a lot of entrepreneurs, there's a lot of business owners, you know, fighting for a cause and doing something that they love, building something, you know, from scratch, nurturing it. You know, there's so much fun to be had in there, but there's a huge amount of heartache and headache. It can feel very lonely, incredibly lonely sometimes. So building up a network of other people who are going through those similar things as well, for me, it's critical. Even recently, struggling with a recruiting challenge, I reached out to my network of kind of ace of my professional peers and asked them for help, and amazingly they were able to help me with that. So I think you've got to have that support network that you build around yourself of people who are going through those similar challenges, because it really bonds you together.
Yes.
My phrase is, you know, let's get lost together, because it's a lot less lonely.
Right. Great. Okay. So building a peer network, a network of peers to support you, has been fabulously supportive. And you talked about coaching as well.
Yes.
And you mentioned a specific instance about asking your peer network for advice with a challenge in terms of recruitment. And that brings me on actually to a question that I was going to ask anyway. You've grown the business significantly, 6 to 25 people. Mm-hmm. You're recruiting people in a specialised industry. Mm-hmm. What about skills in the region? Have you found it easy to find the people with the appropriate skills that you want in the business, or has that been a challenge? And what's been your approach to recruitment? Because I know you've done some pretty innovative things in terms of recruitment, and it'd be good if you can mention those as well.
Yes, I guess one of the biggest challenges has been team along the way. And it's been one of my biggest learnings, because when you come out of university with an economics degree, you definitely don't have any understanding of how the recruitment world works. You know, very, very different issues. So I've had to graze my knees on this one to learn about it. And I have tried lots of different things. I've tried various recruitment agencies. I've also used LinkedIn and social media. I've contacted my peer network. I've gone out to, you know, networking events and tried to build relationships with people and, you know, talent that way as well. But at first I was really looking at at skills. And over time, one of my biggest learnings is that actually fit for me comes first. So fit for us when we recruit now at Thermotex is more important than skills. And some people, that really scares them when I say that, fit first, skills second. I'm not saying that skills aren't important, but they do come secondary for us because we're a small team. We'll work very closely together, and it's so important that we can work closely together and we get on really well, and that we're all fighting for the same thing. And I think it comes back from that family mentality, is that everyone has to be on board. And for us, it means being passionate, and it means being up for the fight and being very determined. It means being hungry to learn and get things wrong. You know, we celebrate our mistakes. You know, if you get something wrong once, great, because you've probably learned something very important from it.
Yes.
And that you can harness that knowledge and do something with it next time.
Yeah.
So it's been a huge journey with recruitment, but in terms of the skills base, we have taken people from far and wide. You know, like you say, we do work in incredibly niche sector.
Yes.
Finding kind of thermal engineers is a small pot, and actually reaching out to them as well, you know, getting in the right, being able to penetrate that group of people has been hard for us.
Yes.
But we have pulled people with maybe what you might class as adjacent skills. So we've taken people from a textiles background, even from a fashion background. We've taken people from construction. We've taken a new recruit who's got a theoretical physics degree, you know, and all these amazing different backgrounds and skill sets have come together and kind of collided, where everyone does have a different applied skill set.
Yes.
But they're learning a huge amount, you know, very much a sponge mentality, that you've got to soak it all up and go learn this stuff. So I guess the skills bit coming second, someone asked me the other day, the fit bit actually supports the fact that we're not necessarily looking for skills, because you can fill the skills gap by training and learning, and a lot, there's so much available out there to train yourself up and learn along. It pushes you a long way.
Yes.
Alongside the formalized training as well to support you, so you can plug the gap on that one.
Right, indeed. And a few weeks ago we interviewed Henry Stewart, who runs Happy Limited, and he talked very much about in recruiting for attitude.
Yes.
And investing in skills development. So it's easy to say recruit for attitude or recruit for fit, but the employer does then very much have to support people with a culture. Now, you just talked about investing in training and support for people. You also talked about having a culture where mistakes aren't punished,
yes,
but they're seen as learning.
Yeah.
Some people may say, well, Chloe, that's easy for you to say. If you make a mistake, you're the boss and you can learn from it. But do you really genuinely embed that culture in the business so people can learn and aren't afraid of glitches on the way if that learning is then embedded?
Yeah, we really try and push this because, and it's not easy for everyone to take on board.
No.
You know, I think people naturally have this philosophy, or it's a taught thing from school maybe, or home or wherever it is, that, you know, you make a mistake and you'll get shouted at.
Yes.
And people are afraid fundamentally of being shouted at or not being loved anymore because they're a failure, and, you know, this kind of crazy expansion, this kind of tornado goes through your brain. But the thing is that how on earth are you expected to learn otherwise, apart from making a mistake? It's like, don't get me wrong, we don't want anyone to make the same mistake 20 times, because then we're not learning. But as long as you're actually learning from your mistakes, that's the most important thing. And that's what we're trying to celebrate, basically.
Yeah. Great stuff. Super. So I'm going to wrap up with a fun question, which is about one of your first ever jobs. You've told me about it when we were playing Track of Music. So tell me, Chloe, what was one of your first ever jobs?
So Jamie told me that you're going to the pantomime this week, and I
yes.
said, you know, like my advent calendar and my penguin hat, you're never too old for some of these kind of festive things. But I think it stems back from childhood. I'm so fond of the pantomime because one of my first jobs was being in a pantomime. So I'm a big fan of musical theatre. You know, I actually trained as a ballerina before even kind of the ideas of being a surgeon or anything else. And so I was about 9 years old, and I was in Aladdin as a chorus dancer in Buxton, and I had, you know, all these jazzy, sparkly trousers and crop tops and things. But I did about 20 shows, and I think I got paid something like £3 a show, and I thought I was minted. You know, yep. It was great. So absolutely brilliant. So no, never too old for the pantomime, that's for sure.
Brilliant. Yeah, I'm so excited about the pantomime. So everyone, the Lyceum Sheffield Theatres were tweeting there are a few tickets available for some of the shows at the pantomime. So get yours now. And many folk in business will know that Sheffield Theatres is crowned for excellence in visitor experience here in Sheffield. It's something to be proud of. And the pantomime is a big part of that. And the pantomime, of course, means that Sheffield Theatres can put all sorts of other exciting and interesting things on all over the year. But I'm really excited about the pantomime. Chloe, thank you for telling us about that. It must have been fun when you were 9 to be in Buxton and participate.
Oh yes, I was getting into all sorts of trouble when I was 9, you know, running through the streets of Buxton in sparkly pants and things like that. So.
Great stuff.
Amazing. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's been a really good discussion. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you very much for coming in today. And folk can find out more about Thermotex on the website. Do you want to give out the address for us?
Yes.
Twitter account.
It's www.thermotex.co.uk, and our Twitter handle is also Thermotex ENG, Thermotex Eng, that is.
Brilliant. Chloe Watmore, Thermotex, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And you've been listening to Business Live, our weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. We'll be back on air next Friday from 9 through to 10. And our guest today has been Chloe Watmore, Managing Director of Thermotex Engineering Limited. Thank you so much, Chloe, for coming in today for a fabulous interview. Thank you for listening. Thanks also to Sangeeta in the studio as our sound engineer today. We couldn't possibly do it without Sangeeta. And I normally say at this point, don't go away now, because next up on Sheffield Live is our fantastic folk music programme from 10 through to 12. But I can't say that today, because we're not having a fantastic folk music programme from 10 through to 12 today. Folk show is taking a break. But folk fans, don't panic, because you could go onto the Sheffield Live website, find the podcast, find Thank Goodness It's Folk, listen to last week's show or listen to any of the shows from the last few weeks. There's a whole load up there and they're all absolutely brilliant. So if you're frustratedly thinking, I've just tuned in to the end of this business nutter because I really wanted to hear folk music and you're telling me it's not going to be on, then don't panic. Just go to the Sheffield Live website, find the folk music. Anyway, this has been Business Live, our weekly business and social enterprise programme. We're always keen to hear from you, so do get in touch. We will be back on air next Friday, so please tune in then. But in the meantime, we'll play out with a little bit of Arcade Fire.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for Business Live.